And welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I am Russ Golmankowicz, and with me today will be David Holly and Tim Gellis. This episode, we will be discussing the 2-2 draw for Fulham at home Friday night against Wigan. It could prove to be a valuable point, but Fulham gave up the lead twice during the match. In the next 90 minutes, we will go through what happened last night at Craven Cottage. Before we go any further, I have to welcome one of my co-hosts who's on the line with me. First of all, I believe this is David. David, are you on the line with me, my friend?
Good afternoon or good evening, Russ. Nice to be back to you. Have you calmed down from last night?
Have I calmed down? What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about, David.
I have to share this with the listeners, Russ. I've never heard you
go
so
ahead.
Angry when I Skyped you last night. You were so angry, and you hadn't even had to sit through it. I mean, I had to sit through it and see what a defensive and negative performance it was in a game really we need to be winning against a poor team, and you hadn't even watched it, and you were more angry than I was. And do you know what, Russ, I like you being angry. I'm glad that you care, because it also proves to some of the idiots out there that you are just as much of a fan as we are over here in the UK.
Well, thanks for saying that, David. You know, I do care, and I was very frustrated by this match, this result, but I was frustrated before the match even began. We'll go through that. I've calmed down. I watched the match, and my frustration from last night hasn't really subsided. I have to be honest. It's still the same. But I believe our other co-host is on the line, so I'm going to bring him on. Tim, how you doing, my friend? Could this be Tim?
It's Michael, Russ.
Oh, it's Michael. Okay. I'm sorry. I was not aware, you know, again, I was not aware you were going to be joining us. You said you might be able to join us. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, not too bad. I can put the phone down if you like, Russ.
No, Mike.
I
wanted you to join us. You know, I think of you, believe it or not. I was thinking about this before, because sometimes you only, you know, you can only let me know at the last minute because of, you know, again, life. You know, life, you know, doesn't allow you to come on every single time. You know, whenever you can, it's a bonus. But I think of you as the show's James Bond. You are. You are the show's James Bond. So I think of you that way, and that's a high compliment. I see David actually as probably Q. David probably is Q, but you're James Bond.
Well, thanks very much. I think David might be too funny.
All right. Sorry about that. Hopefully Tim will be joining us shortly, and I look forward to going through. And it looks like Tim is on with us now, so I'm going to bring him on right now. Tim, how you doing, my friend? It's been a long time.
Hey.
I'm sorry, Tim. Could you say something again? You're coming in kind of light there.
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me?
Okay, there we go.
Hey, sorry about that.
That's okay, Tim. Listen, it's been a long time, but I appreciate you coming on and going through this match with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry, it's been a very long time for me. Kind of falling off the cliff a bit, but I'm back and ready to talk about 20th place Fulham. So let's do this.
So am I, Tim. So am I. Well, listen, why don't I start with you? I'm going to start with you, and I'll go through the other guys. Just give me your opening thoughts on the 2-2 draw for Fulham last night at Craven Cottage.
It wasn't a particularly good game by any stretch of the imagination. Both teams clearly in the 20s, you know. Wigan obviously in the drop zone, Fulham above it. First half was pretty forgettable. Second half, things kind of opened up a bit. But I think there's kind of two things to note. We can talk more about this later, but I thought that Wigan coming into the game had a pretty bad offense with a halfway decent defense, which sounds kind of crazy, but if you look at their numbers, it's true. And I thought that we actually had some really good shots, particularly in what's called like the danger zone, which again I can talk about later. But
yep.
Man, our defense really just let us down. I mean, I think the free kick from Pennant, you know, not too much you can do about that except Bettinelli, you know, should probably stop that. But that free header they had to tie it up was just kind of an excuse. Not free header, but that second goal they had, just really bad defense, kind of sums up our season to date.
Sure does, Tim. You know, again, that second goal is the one that has really irritated me. And the approach, the overall approach to the match is what has really irritated me. You know, I wish I could say I'm in a great mood. I'm still upset. It's been almost 24 hours. I'm still upset. It's like David said, wasn't even there, and I'm upset. I was upset last night. I was upset watching it, and I guess you could say, you know, again, it's a good result. You know, it's a good result. It's not a great result. A great result would have been 3 points, I'm sorry, Tim. Do you something else you wanted to add?
Yeah, but conversely, we didn't get blown out, and that would have been the worst result imaginable. So,
well, this is true on that. This is true on that. And listen, Tim, I'm going to be leaning on you when we get the stat attack. I'm going to go through the stats, but if you have any interesting stats you want to share, because I know you enjoy stats, please feel free to.
Will do.
Okay. Back over to you, Mike. Again, you were there. I want to get your opening thoughts on what happened last night.
Well, I wouldn't say, I have to disagree with him. I wouldn't say it was a good result. It was an okay result. We didn't lose. But,
okay.
Given the circumstances, what we needed to do and really, you know, win in front of the home crowd after that run of defeats. So it was disappointing. The first half was probably as bad as we've played all year, even though we were 2-1 up. It was two individual moments of skill which got us the goals, but apart from that, we allowed them to have the ball, gave them far too much time, didn't pressurise them enough, and that was clearly a game plan, because Kit said that afterwards, and you know, the lineup was so ultra defensive and negative for a home game, which is 2 days before season tickets are due to go on sale, and we need 3 points to confirm staying up. It was just, you know, from the moment we saw the team, it was worrying, and then it didn't change as the game went on. You know, okay, we took the lead twice, but it just wasn't good enough. Second half, we improved a little bit. We had chances, and to be fair, they didn't have that many chances. Bettinelli wasn't that busy, but it just wasn't good enough. It just was not good enough at this stage of the season, and how important the game was and what we had to do to win, really. Far too negative, and a lot of the atmosphere in the ground probably never came over on the replay, was absolutely toxic in the first half. Even, you know, the only reason there wasn't booze at halftime was because we were winning 2-1, not because, like I say, it was an appalling performance.
Yeah, Mike, listen, it actually did come over at the very end. I could hear it. I could hear it building at the very end, and gentlemen Jim and Sean Davis did talk about that a little bit, so they could hear the booze starting to build. So you definitely heard that. And let me correct. I used a bad word. Good result was definitely, you're right about that. It's not a proper word to use. Okay is actually the right word to use. Okay result, because really we needed all 3 points. I couldn't agree with you more for correcting me, because you're right about that. David, over to you. You were there as well. Just share with me your opening thoughts on the match.
Well, I'm going to correct all three of you that it was an okay result. It was only an okay result when you see the results today, I think, really. That's made it more palatable. It was a crap result, we have to say. I mean, it was a crap performance and a crap result. And it's not just about the actual points that we got or we didn't get or what we dropped. But, you know, as Mike was touching on, really, this was a chance to try and win the crowd back at home. It's a much bigger picture. You know, Fulham, they want to start selling season tickets on Monday. They're going to struggle. I'm sure they're going to struggle, even with the supposed incentives that are coming. It was a perfect chance to, you know, to put the Friday night hoodoo to bed. The perfect chance to, you know, to show that we are actually better than the table. The table does lie. Obviously, the table doesn't lie. I say it every week, the table doesn't lie, but we could have proved maybe the table does. We could have shown what a poor team Wigan are, because the table doesn't lie. And actually, the fact that it's just been unlucky, like Kit says. But no, we're not. You know, we're not unlucky. It was awful. It really was. He set the team up wrongly. They didn't go about their business correctly. Substitutions were perhaps a bit mystifying as well. Tactics. And yes, perhaps second half, You know, when we actually had to go for it a bit more and we opened up a bit, we created a few more chances. But, you know, unfortunately, Corley got a few of those and he missed. Matt Smith, you know, he had run himself into the ground a bit, but I still think he could have probably banged them in had he been there. But, you know, it wasn't okay because, I mean, I've heard boos at half-time and I've heard boos at the final whistle, but these started during the match. When he made that substitution to take off, you know, McCormack for Stafalidis with
right.
a minute or so, whether of injury time left, you know, we're trying to win a game and they're making a substitution. You know, the crowd wanted a win. Nothing but a win would have really helped. The last-minute goal there, and you could have forgiven... You know, the crowd would have forgiven 95% of what happened last night, I think, because they'd have gone away happy with this last-minute goal. But, no, I mean, it was awful. I mean, OK, it wasn't OK for me, really. It's only OK when you look at today's results and the fact that everybody else has been beaten.
That's a very interesting point. And what's funny, David, you know, again, I was following the matches today, and I didn't want to be following the matches today. I think that's part of the point here, that, you know, spending my morning, which was your afternoon, following a match between Watford and Millwall, you know, I wasn't expecting to do that, but I did. And the result went our way. The Rotherham result went our way. So, yes, the results did go our way. But we're going to focus on Fulham because that's what we need to focus on. I think that's part of the problem here. I don't want Fulham just to back into safety. I want them to take it. Here was an opportunity, guys, to take it. And the manager set us up negatively, and we're going to talk about the starting 11. And I feel personally was playing not to lose. And I don't like a club that I love play not to lose. I want them to play to win every single match. This is my opinion, but I believe he set us up to ensure that we would at least get a point out of this and not lose the match. And if we win the match, that's great. But I think the whole part of this was not to lose. And I tell you that I hate that. I hate that attitude. I'm really ticked off at our manager right now, Kit Simons. I'm really angry. And he's this close to losing me completely. I've said this to you, David, offline. I'm not quite there yet for certain reasons, but he's losing me because this was an opportunity to put relegation pretty much off the table, and his approach was negative, and I just cannot agree with it. I cannot agree the approach. Like Mike said, you know, here's an opportunity to win the fans over. You know, go for it. You know, get all 3 points and you play like that. I'm sorry. You've lost me there. All right, and honestly, guys, I'm going to read the manager reaction after we talk about the starting 11 because I want to read it. I want to get your thoughts of what Kit said after the match because it kind of goes to what I'm talking about right now. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Again, you've already said you weren't a fan of the starting 11, so just expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I tweeted earlier on in the day sort of my lineup that I wanted, and you know, I'm going with Roberts and Kaká and Ruiz and everyone, and then I tweet, this is what I expect, and okay, I was a little bit out, but it was the actual team. If we were away at Sheffield Wednesday, which is what this
right.
team pretty much was, and you're looking to get a point, then fine. You know, you can
right.
understand the you can understand the logic behind it, but as David said, you know, we've had announcements about season tickets. We've had announcements that Pat Roberts is unhappy, but we're going to offer him a contract. You know, all these things, and you know, almost the last chance to get fans happy before Monday. And I was at a meeting yesterday with the club, and you know, McIntosh has made it clear that. It's going to be substantial, you know, reductions in the season ticket price to get the fans to buy them again. And but even that, you know, they're going to struggle because there's enough fans who are just saying, you know, I just can't watch this, you know. So the actual lineup, yeah, it was far too negative. and you know, it didn't really make sense in the bigger picture. We needed to take the game to them. They're second from bottom. I don't care if they've just got a new manager. You know, the table is showing they are the second worst side in the league, you know, even if we're the fifth one. And you know, we should be going at them. Kaká and Ruiz, when they came on at Charlton, whatever your individual feelings about them, did make a difference. And I expected us to take that into this game. And to find them both a sub, to find Roberts not anywhere in the squad again, no central midfielders on the bench either. It was just, it just looked horrible. And as you know, and as I said earlier, as soon as we kicked off, we could see that this is what we're going to do. And there were times in that first half when McCormick or Smith were so isolated, they were on the edge of the box, and there was no Kavanagh, there was no Hoogland anywhere near him. And there was one point where McCormick sort of stood there, looked around and went, well, where the, you know, are you? Because we were just so defensive. And
yep.
So, yeah, that's the way it read when you got the team, and that's the way it played out.
I totally agree with all of that, Mike. And before I go to the other guys, you know, I said this to myself, and, you know, I can't believe I'm going to mention this, but I think it's worth mentioning. Danny Guthrie, who just came to Fulham's, only played two matches, very small sample, but he offered something different in the midfield. Let me ask you, this is a crazy question, but if Guthrie is available, do you think Kit changes the mentality and goes for something different, or do you think he still plays so defensively? Because Guthrie is actually someone that can create opportunities with his passing ability in central midfield. This was completely defensive.
I think if Guthrie had been fit, he would have been in the middle, and Tunnicliffe would have been in Hoogland's position.
Okay.
And that would have been, you know, and Hoogland would probably have been right back. So we, with Guthrie's passing, we would have had maybe a bit more attacking wise. So it would have been similar to Tuesday. But in the end, you know, as I say, Ruiz and Kaká made a difference attacking wise. And so you
That's
wanted
right,
to see,
yeah.
You wanted to take Kavanagh out, and you wanted a more natural person on the right, possibly, you know. But, yeah, you know, Guthrie has shown how poor our passing is. In a game and a half where there's a bloke who's played two games all season, he's shown a little bit of quality that is the difference. Somebody who can find a player in a white shirt. And I'm afraid
yeah.
Parker and Tunnicliffe and, you know, without Christensen and Heidman in the team, they just haven't got the passing range at all. And so it would have been a bit more attacking, but it would have probably still been a slightly, you know, let them have the ball, let's hope we don't lose type attitude.
Yeah, and again, it's the approach that is really angering me, Mike. But I do think if Guthrie was available, at least there would be some creativity. Like you said, it's someone with the ability to pass, to find an open form player, and you know, with that passing ability, and we're limited. You know, you're right. You know, even young Emerson Hyman does have that ability, but he's a young player. But Danny Guthrie has already had a little bit of an impact in two matches. It's crazy to say that. It just shows what the situation is in central midfield. It's more defensive in nature, but we need someone that can create, and that's what Danny Guthrie has been able to do in a very short period of time. Tim, over to you. I'm curious your thoughts when you saw the starting 11. Are you feeling similar to me and Mike, or do you have a different take on it?
I kind of agree with what they're saying. It was a very defensive lineup, which I guess I can kind of see what Kit was trying to accomplish, in the sense that, you know, if we were to get caught and lose this game, it would be an absolute disaster. But I think he was especially overly cautious, considering just how bad on offense. I mean, granted, they still scored two goals, but putting that aside, I mean, just some quick numbers for you. But obviously, the second least in goals scored, 20th of 24 in total shots. It was the least amount of shots on target, you know, so shots are actually going toward the net, like, they have the least amount. And then 19th in, you know, their shots in what's called the danger zone, which is basically like the 6-yard box and kind of behind that in the center circle area. And, but, you know, with a penalty spot, it's back. So basically, their offense is so woeful that I felt like there could have been, you know, Ruiz or Kaká and Nikolic could have came in there and made a big difference in the game, and maybe someone else as well. Or maybe going three up front instead of what was happening where we were basically playing like a 4-5-1 with McCormick dropping so deep to pick up the ball.
Yep.
Because he was just getting, as you mentioned before, he was getting so isolated that it was kind of playing into Wigan's hands. And granted, Wigan actually does have a halfway decent defense. And that, I mean, granted, they are pretty bad and probably going to get relegated, but that's the one kind of calling card they have. But I don't know. I think the game was kind of there for the taking, and I think they just kind of played it a little bit too conservatively.
Honestly, I think that it was way too conservative. I couldn't agree with you more. I don't even think it's a little conservative. I think it was very conservative, and that's not what I expect from Fulham Football Club, Tim. You know, again, I expect, you know, like Mike said, if we're on the road, if we're at Sheffield Wednesday, I get it. You know, I used to complain about how Roy Hodgson used to set us up on the road, but this is at home. This is at home. That's the part of this that's rubbing me the wrong way. This is at home. This is, you know, again, I understand it's a results business. He needs to get a safe, and I'll read what he has to say in the manager reaction because he does talk about that. But there's no reason to set us up like that. Basically, to set us up not to lose. I hate that approach. David, over to you on the starting 11. Obviously, you and I talked about this before the match. So share your thoughts about the starting 11.
Well, we knew that Guthrie was missing because that was announced previously. So
yeah.
On the previous show, I said, well, why not put Fofana in there? Have someone to run at them a bit in the middle, which kind of bridges the gap between the midfield and the forwards. And I don't know what's happened to Fofana, whether he's injured and or they've just taken him out of it completely because he's disappeared. You know, it's just when we needed a central midfield, he's disappeared. So if you're going to have Tunnicliffe and Park in the middle, you've got to have people wide who are going to offer you something going forward. And, you know, it was perfect opportunity for Kakanicic, really, in the team. You know, on the right, it is more difficult, I guess. I can understand the quandary you have with Pat Roberts and everything else, but, you know, we should have shown some intent to attack, but we didn't. And so, consequently, the first half, it was just attack against defence almost. You know, we just sat there, two banks of four, mopping up the pressure in the main with the occasional foray forward. And this isn't the way you should be playing at home, not when you're in a situation where you need points to ensure safety, when you need a performance as well as points to start winning the home crowd back. Because if our home form has really dived, you know, I think the away form, we've been better away from home probably than we've been overall for years in some respects, because we went years where we hardly won a game away from home. So,
right.
Although the performances haven't always been great, you know, we've actually been picking up the odd win here. And, you know, we've won, you know, I can think of three off the top of my head, you know, Birmingham and Brighton and Huddersfield away from home. Are there any others? I don't know. I'm sure there are. But, you know, three wins away from home is more than we managed in a lot of Premier League seasons. It's our home form where the problem is, and it's, you know, the home form where the crowds are upset. And, you know, I'm very disappointed by the crowd, really. I know it's a Friday night, it's a pain in the backside time to go there, but, you know, 16,000 for a crucial match. Yes, we know Wigan don't bring very many, but still, you know, that kind of shows you. If for a real serious match like that, 16,000, you know, where are we going to be next time? Where are we going to be against Rotherham next week? They won't bring very many down either. Are we going to have a smaller crowd again? You know, and this is the problem Fulham are facing with, you know, trying to get people to buy their season tickets because they need that money at the start of the season, I guess. They need it up front. And I'll be buying, of course I will, because I'm stupid. I always buy a season ticket. And I'm sure Mike will be buying, not because he's stupid, obviously, but he's dedicated, like I am as well.
Right.
But I spoke to a lot of people, and they're saying, no, they're not going to renew because of one reason or another. And it's not just about the awful football. I mean, it's some, you know, all these Friday night fixes and stuff. It means that people can't get to the games always, and they start to say, well, hold on a minute, it's not worth me buying a season ticket. I don't need to actually reserve a seat because there's always going to be a seat available. I'm not saving any money by buying a season ticket because I'm missing, you know, half the games. And so the club have got a real issue here, and this is, I think, kind of all part of the holistic issue there is really at the club, that it's not working together as a unit. You know, that it's all got its different factions and the naivety that the way the club is run. And, you know, in some ways, you know, the management or Ali Mack or Shahid Khan should be saying to Kit Wright, I don't really care if we win or lose this match, but you've got to go out there and attack and put in, you know, a real sort of swashbuckling performance to win the crowd over, because we need bums on seats. We need people to buy season tickets. And it's a bit disjointed. So from a business point of view and from a football point of view, the two sides of the argument are not, they're not agreeing with each other. They're kind of working in different ways almost. It was just dire. It was just really dire to go into that with that setup into a home match of such importance. And it just shows that, you know, as you say, Kit was so frightened of losing almost. He was more happy to take the point. And of course, the point was better for us than it was for them, obviously.
Right.
We know that, but still, it's just the you know, the image it creates and the messages it sends out to everyone. It was just awful, and you know, I feel sorry for the players because obviously they get to hear the boos and everything, and you know, they were trying their best, but it was disjointed as well. It was just disjointed, and there's, you know, Mike said to me something last night about it, that there seems to be almost some, you know, cliques within the team, that some of them seem to enjoy playing together and some of them don't. And when you look at it, it looks like that in a way, that there just doesn't seem to be this cohesion among the team because of maybe the way it gets chopped and changed around. And, you know, we're back to a Felix Bingo situation almost. There were just some strange tactical decisions. And, you know, I mean, maybe Dan Byrne will be at right back next week. Again, you know, I'd start to sort of wouldn't rule anything out, because it's getting stranger and stranger, I think, the way that Kit seems to be picking the side. So, not happy at all.
Well, I certainly understand that, David. I'm not happy as well. And, you know, I've seen it on social media that there are many fans, I shouldn't say that there aren't fans that are happy. I'm just saying, you know, obviously, we're all Fulham supporters, but I think that there are many that are just not happy with the result, not happy with the approach, and like you said, it just sends this bad message, I thought. The approach sent that message. You know what? We're going to play for a point. We're going to, you know, again, we're going to play like this. You know, we're not going to go for the victory, and like you said to me, David, and I couldn't agree with you more, sometimes your best defense is your offense, and this was the exact opposite approach. This was, you know, again, trying to make it difficult on them, you know, keeping the shape. And Kit, we'll talk about that. You know that Fulham kept their shape, and that's great. But in the end, you know, the style of play, the approach is just something I just can't get on board at home. On the road, maybe. At home, no, definitely not. So, guys, I'm going to read the manager reaction, a portion of it, and just get your thoughts on it, because we are talking about the starting 11, and see if it kind of backs up what we watched. All right. So, again, this is on the FulhamFC.com website, and this is quotes from Kit Simon. So this is Kit saying, Gary Caldwell had just come to take charge at Wigan, and that gave them a lift without a doubt. They passed the ball well, and it was a tough game for us. I would have loved all 3 points, but one now and stopping them getting any extra is precious. It was frustrating to concede 2 leads, but in open play we defended well and looked solid. We conceded a bit of possession, which I thought might happen, so I wasn't overly worried about it, as our shape was good and we limited them to very few chances. I don't really remember Marcus Bettinelli making a save, but to concede from 2 set pieces is something we need to do better on. In the last 2 games, we've looked solid. It might not be easy on the eye, but to be honest, I don't care too much about that at the moment. It's a results business, and we got a result tonight. It wasn't the ideal one, but it could have been worse, that's for sure. And then it goes on, Fulham had a couple of late chances in the dying stages, but saw their efforts either saved or blocked. And Simons continued again, this is Kit again. We had really good opportunities, but we needed to be more clinical, and if we had been, we'd have scored at least one of them. But it's understandable with the situation we're in. The players are desperate to make sure they do enough to keep us in the division, so I can understand their anxiety. McCormick made way, again, this back to the story, for Stafford's deep into injury time with some of the home support querying the decisions. Kitt explained, again, quote from Kitt, "Ross has played a lot of football and is carrying a bit of a knee injury. With 2 minutes to go, I thought we were creating chances from central and Ross was in a wider area. I wanted to win the game, of course I did, but I was equally concerned about making sure we got the point. I understand people are frustrated that we didn't win the game. 3 points would have been virtually a celebration. It wasn't to be, and people are disappointed. My remit is to do the right thing for the club, and keeping us in the championship is the only thing that matters to me. What people think of decisions I make is up to them. When I took over, we had 1 point from 7 games, and we're in dire straits. We've turned it around, and we'll do enough to keep us in the division and then rebuild and be better and stronger next year." Okay. Again, those are quotes from Kitt Simons after the match yesterday, and you can actually read the manager reaction on the FulhamFC.com website. I've also posted it on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. And Tim, I'm going to start with you. I want to get your thoughts regarding what Kitt shared after the match.
You know, I kind of agree with the Ross McCormick substitution a bit. I know that was kind of a thing that a lot of people were upset about when it happened. You could hear the booing kind of coming through on Gentleman Jim, but you know, as much as we don't like the fact how he is so conservative, you can't really fault him for his logic. You might not like the results, literally and figuratively, but he has a point. You know, like, his job is to keep us up, and although things are really bad on the team, with the team, both in terms of performances and the results, losing that game would have been an absolute disaster on a lot of ways. And I'm not excusing the result by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
Obviously, they should have won, and it was very disappointing. But as I mentioned before, like, could you imagine had we gotten blown out? You know, that would have just been absolutely dreadful. And thankfully, the results, they went our way. And even before yesterday, like, the odds of getting relegated are kind of dropping down and down and down a bit. But, you know, it's one of the things where you're just like, I see where you're coming from, but I agree with what you're saying. I just don't particularly want to agree with what you're saying, if that makes sense.
And I understand that, Tim. You know, again, you analyze that. I see where you're going on your analysis of Kitt Simons' comments, because again, his job is to keep Fulham up, and I understand that. I understand. You know, and again, I'm reading through it. I understand his logic behind it. I guess it's just not what I want to hear or was hoping to see. So I guess that's where the difference is. I wanted a team that was going to put it away and go for a victory and put relegation behind us, because you really could have done that pretty much with a victory.
Much.
You leave the door ajar now. Very small.
I commented on someone on Twitter with someone yesterday that, you know, had we won, Wigan would have been totally relegated and we would have been safe. But because it's a draw now, you know, both teams just have a whole bunch more ulcers. So
that's a good point. It's a good point because, again, it just keeps the saga going, I guess. It keeps the story going. And honestly, Tim, I guess the frustration for me is I wanted the story to end. And the story continues. It continues to Rotherham. And I guess, you know, again, I understand where he's coming from. I respect his view on it. Again, I'm just looking at it in a different way as a fan. He's looking at it as a manager. So that's where I'm colliding with Kitt Simons today. Okay, Mike, over to you. What are your thoughts about Kitt's reaction after the match?
Well, it sort of summed up the performance. It's a quite dour sort of response to what he's just watched. And you could argue that he's being his own man and just saying, you know, I don't care about how we play. I wanted the result. That's what I've got. But, to finish it with his, going back to he turned things round when we were in a dire strait. Well, he might have turned things round, but we've gone back to the beginning again, haven't we? You know, we're not losing 5 or 6 games in a row, but we've just gone backwards since Boxing Day, as we spoke about the other last week. And the McCormick substitution, I could have understood it if it was 5 minutes earlier, but so we were actually in their end, their half, and down their end of the pitch when he made the substitution. If anything, if I was going to try and take someone off to shore things up, it would have been Hoogland, because he was just so unfit for the last 10, 15 minutes. He couldn't come back and help Grimmer out. You know, whenever he was forward, he couldn't, you know, he was struggling all the time to get back. And as for, you know, conceding possession, we weren't playing Liverpool. You know, we weren't a Roy Hodgson team, two banks of four and the two strikers defending as a proper unit. We're playing Wigan, who are second from bottom. It's just not acceptable. It really isn't. And it's clearly either, you know, the response of a man who knows he hasn't got the job, or he actually thinks he has got a chance of keeping it. But, yeah, it's just nothing positive from that at all. He doesn't, you know, Smith's substitution I actually agree with, because he really was shattered, and he couldn't run anymore. So I thought the fans were a bit harsh on him there. But yeah, the McCormick one didn't make sense at all for me.
You know, we're definitely going to talk about the Smith substitution later on in the show, Mike, because, again, I actually I pulled up an article, you know, about Matt Smith that's actually on the Fulham website, and it kind of talks to that a little bit, and also some other fans have actually clarified it to me, just what you said, you know, fans that were at Craven Cottage that were watching Matt Smith that said he was really running out of gas, that he looked extremely tired out there, and I think the article is going to back that up. So we'll definitely talk about Matt Smith, because my opinion on that has changed, and thank you to the fans who put it on Facebook to me to let me know what they were watching at Craven Cottage in regards to Matt Smith. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. David, over to you on Kit's reaction after the match. I'm curious your thoughts on it.
Well, I think most of it's a load of rubbish. It's he's just kind of trying to justify himself. It's almost defending the indefensible, I said, I think, on Twitter, which is quite ironic when we can't defend half the time. Gary Caldwell has just come in to take charge at Wigan, and that has given them a lift. No, Kit, it's your lineup has given them a lift. They've passed the ball well, and it was a tough game for us because we sat back and let them pass the ball. You know, we looked solid. Did we look solid? We defended well and looked solid. Well, we didn't look very solid when we let the ball in at the corner. That wasn't defending very well. We conceded a bit of possession. My understatement of the year, home match, sat back, let them play. I wasn't overly worried, as it's our shape was good. I mean, you couldn't have been more compact, really. You know, I think a black hole would have been less dense than how we were, the way we were sitting back. You know, in the last two games, we looked solid. Great, you know, that's wonderful. We looked really solid, you know. But did we win either of them? No. And he said, I've come here I've turned things around. Yes, well, he has turned things around twice. First for the better and second for the worst. So I think most of it is just, you know, like Mike says, he's either deluded and thinks he's actually doing a good job, or he's kind of just, like Martin Yole was, saying the same thing for the last 3 years of his stint as manager, because he knew that he was going to go at any time, and he couldn't believe he was still there for 3 years, saying, well, you know, we should have not lost Dempsey and Sean Connery. Sorry, I'm like, why am I doing Sean Connery when I'm trying to do Martin Yole?
You actually did sound like Sean Connery. That's pretty funny. You actually did sound like Sean Connery.
Greetings, Miss Moneypenny. We should not have lost Danny Murphy and Clint Dempsey. When they went to Spectre, we were
okay,
lost.
David, okay, David, okay.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, I think most of what he said is just, you know, it doesn't wash with me at all. I'm not convinced by it in the slightest. He's basically said, OK, well, Wigan have got a new manager. They're going to be better than us. I'm just going to sit back and defend.
Yeah. Listen, you know, and actually, David, that was a pretty good Sean Connery. I just want to mention that, by the way. But getting to the comments, to Mike, what you said, I think that he believes that he's going to be the manager next season. I've said that on College Talk. So I do believe he feels that way. And you know what? I want my manager to feel that way. I just disagree with the commentary after the match. You know, I actually want Kit to succeed. Like I said, I'm not all the way there yet. I want him to succeed. I just don't like the approach in this match specifically. I just didn't like the message it sent, and it's backed up by his quotes after the match. It really, I mean, everything we watched, guys, was pretty much backed up in his quotes in the manager reaction. So it is what it is. This is, I truly believe this is what he wanted. He wanted, in my opinion, not to lose. And yes, that was important. It was, I think that was the most important thing. And my attitude is, no, getting the 3 points is the most important thing. Putting it to bed, ending the storyline was the most important thing. But he was, you know, again, he was looking at it in a different way. I do understand how he was looking at it. I just disagree with it. All right. All right, guys, let's get into just you know, again, I'm not going to go through a ton of key moments. I'm just going to go basically through the goals and some other key moments. And I will start with you, Mike. Just share with me your thoughts on the opening goal. Now, it came in the 4th minute. It came fairly quickly. This was really our first opportunity of the match. It was set up by Sean Kavanagh, really got the ball nicely to Ross McCormack, and it was just, again, it just happened so fast. Talk about the goal that put Fulham in the early lead.
Yeah, if I remember rightly, I think it might have been Hudson who actually started it, or maybe one of them, midfield, I'm not really sure. But, yeah, Kavanagh got it on the left-hand side and then just poked the ball through to McCormack. It was, you know, it was a decent little pass by Kavanagh, and McCormack did well, got on the edge of the box or the D, and curled it around the centre-back. And, yeah, I mean, you know, we all thought, yeah, one up, and as I said the other day, once we score first, we certainly don't lose, and we usually win most of the game. So it looked like it was going to be the predicted 3 or 4 nil win. Of course, it didn't turn out to be. But it was a good goal by McCormack, and I was pleased for Kavanagh as well. But to be fair, that was probably his sole contribution to the game. He had a couple of shots. But I actually felt sorry for him towards the end of the game. He was getting a lot of stick from the crowd, certainly from the Johnny Haynes where I was hitting. And I almost felt he was left out to dry, just like he was left out to dry at Derby by McGaff. And I think he's got to take him out of the firing line now, really, to be honest. So I just wanted to say that about Kavanagh, really. But it was a good goal by McCormack, and we haven't seen enough of him doing that, getting on the edge of the box and getting a decent shot away.
Yeah, listen, he was right on the edge of the box, perfect distance, and he put it in the back of the net. It was a really nice goal by Ross McCormack, and that puts Fulham in the lead. And, David, I'm going to go to you next, because what's interesting here, you know, I'm thinking, like Mike had mentioned, you know, we're going up 1-0. Oh, this is the opportunity to really take it to them, go up 2-3, possibly 4. You know, again, this is the springboard. Well, instead of it being a springboard, Wigan came back in the match and really, again, up to their goal, they were really controlling the play, as, you know, as we've been talking about with the manager reaction. You know, he talked about them having more possession. Well, it really began here. And then it all led up in the 22nd minute. Listen, this was a well-taken free kick by Jermaine Pennant. He scores about 25 yards from goal. Talk about this. And, you know, I'm curious your thoughts about Marcus Bettinelli. Do you think he could have done better, or do you think this is just a great goal?
Well, it started with a kind of – it was a bit of a wild challenge by Scott Parker, actually. He came flying in, and, I mean, he was going to the ball. But he just, I don't know, he clipped the guy. I'm quite surprised the referee didn't get the book out, really, because it looked quite a bad tackle. But it wasn't really any contact, not much contact. But, you know, you can't argue with the decision. But, you know, on these things, you've always got to sort of question the goalkeeper's positioning, because when the wall is there, the idea, I guess, is always to go for that near post. I think that's where the ball will go. Sure, you know, if you stand at your near post, they might put it the other way, but normally it's over the wall into that near post. So, now, was Bettinelli in the right place? I don't know. You could say no, he wasn't, because he should have saved it. But it was well taken. I don't think you can blame Bettinelli. but I can understand why people are questioning it. You know, it had a good sort of flight on it, the ball. It wasn't just, you know, it had a loop on it and a curl. It was well taken, but I think, you know, as a goalkeeper myself, remember, you would always be wary of your near post in that when a free kick's taken from that situation. And I'm trying to think of, there's not that many where people would go for the other side, not normally. So perhaps he was a step too far the other way. I know, I can appreciate, obviously, he's trying to cover his goal as best he can, but, you know, I wouldn't blame him too much for it. I think Mike said something yesterday. It was like the days of Steve Sidwell again in the team, or someone did, you know, that sort of challenge given away on the edge of the area, conceding free kicks. It was stupid to be doing that, really. Combination. I'd say 90% great free kick, 10% question Bettinelli.
Okay. And that's why I wanted to ask it to you that way, because I think that this had much more to do with just a great goal by Jermaine Pennant. And as gentleman Jim was saying, I guess he scored a few from that area just recently. So this shouldn't be a shock that he was able to score from there. And, you know, I don't blame Marcus Bettinelli really on this. I think this is just a great goal, you know. But I wanted to bring it to you since you were a goalkeeper, David, and that's why you really have a 90-10 split, and I understand that. All right, Tim, over to you. Let's talk about Fulham going ahead with a goal by Matt Smith. And what's interesting about this is that he actually scored with not his favorite foot, but the other foot. And this is just a great goal. Talk about this goal by Matt Smith in the 35th minute that put Fulham ahead.
You know, that might be the goal of the season, or at least definitely in the top, you know, 4 or 5, in my opinion. You know, just a kind of a, when he shot it, you couldn't really see where it was going, and it just kind of like curved, almost like a curveball into the back of the net. It's a beautiful shot. I will say though that it was kind of worrisome in some regards that both of our goals were kind of wonder shots from, you know, downtown, if you will, behind the 3-point arc, to the basketball analogy. I guess it kind of shows that, you know, how mediocre our offense is, and actually how decent their Wiggins defense is. But beyond that, wow, that's such a beautiful goal. And unfortunately, they couldn't really capitalize it, you know, really get that third goal before halftime to really put the game to bed.
Absolutely. You know, and I'm glad that you ended it that way, because, again, this is in the 35th minute. We couldn't really get that third goal to go up two, and the half ends 2-1. And we start the second half. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you, because Wigan came out strong again in the beginning of the second half and controlled the play. But Fulham actually did have a couple of opportunities in the 59th minute. A shot by Ross McCormick was actually blocked by the face of Harry Maguire. You should see this on the replay. And then Sean Kavanagh, like you mentioned, Sean Kavanagh had a couple shots. This is one of them, but his shot went wide. And, you know, again, Fulham did have a few opportunities. But then I want to ask you again, this is the point where I want to talk about the substitution, because in the 63rd minute, Colley Woodrow comes on for Matt Smith. And like I mentioned, many fans contacted me on Facebook after I put up the Facebook post saying that I didn't understand the substitution. They tried to clarify it with me that they noticed that he looked extremely tired, and this is probably more of a tactical move because of fitness, and it had more to do with that. But I'm curious your thoughts at the time when they made the switch. Mike, you there? Did I lose Mike?
Sorry, Russ, cut out there.
That's okay. That's okay. I wanted to get your thoughts on the substitution.
Of Smith, yeah?
Yes.
As I said earlier, I mean, he was shattered. And actually, in the first half, there were times when he was in front of me where he was blowing out his arse, as we say. And he's clearly, you know, he's a big lad. I've seen the word lumbering used a couple of times. You know, let's not take it away from him. He scored a good goal and he wins his headers. But if he's not doing that, he hasn't got the pace or the movement to really close players down. And, you know, an hour, just over an hour into the game, he was pretty isolated on his own up front and needed to be replaced. But I'm going to go back to what I said the other day in the show, is that he's the plan B. And we start with plan B, and I had people around me saying, well, you know, he's going off, what are we going to do now? And Woodrow comes on, who is a talent and who's still learning the game. But we still started pumping balls up. And so, you know, because that's the mindset of the team and the way it was set up. And, it just showed, really, you know, he's useful, but I believe useful from the bench, and that should be his position. And he needed to go off, and I was disappointed with the crowd's reaction. I mean, it was, yes, Kit made lots of mistakes yesterday, but for me, that wasn't one of them, and I don't think people were looking at the bigger picture with regards to Smith's general lack of fitness, and that is an issue for him. I mean, he's in his mid-20s, he should be a lot fitter than that.
No, listen, very good point, and I'm going to share this again. This is on the FulhamFC.com website. It's an article all about Matt Smith. He talks about my best goal, and here's a part where he's quoted, and this is in the article. It says, Tyron Smith was substituted just after the hour mark, and Matt Smith said, the toll of the other night at Charlton Athletic, which was a tough 90 minutes and coming through a hard 60 here, meant the manager wanted to freshen things up, and Colley came on and looked lively. So he's talking about his fitness, and he brought on Colley, and Colley offered something a little bit different, freshened things up. So, again, I think it was a combination of that he was tired, and Colley, obviously, maybe it was a little bit tactical, could offer something else. So again, that's why I wanted to share that. But again, this is started with my benefit because – at the time, I just didn't understand it. I didn't understand. I'm not at Craven Cottage. I didn't understand. I didn't see it. So I'm so thankful to all the Fulham supporters that did contact me and let me know that this really was about fitness for Matt Smith, and more than tactical. I mean, tactical might have had something to do with it, but I think there's more to do with Matt Smith basically running out of gas. All right. So again, if that's the case, then it was the right decision, I think. All right, David, back to you. 69th minute, we have the equalizer by Jason Pearce. He scores to level the match from play off of a corner kick. And again, poor defending on a corner kick. Sean Davis must have said that 3 or 4 times right after it happened, and was just shocked by the defending on this goal. Talk about it.
Well, actually, I watched this back because it was at the other end from me, and I wanted to see who the culprits were.
Okay.
Obviously, the corner was an outswinger played kind of to sort of towards the edge of the penalty area, and the guy's had a completely free head and he's headed it across goal, and it's been touched in at the far post. Michael Turner's got his head in his hands at the far post. Dan Byrne and Hoogland are not very happy it's towards the near post, but Hoogland seems to be suggesting it's someone else. But from the videotape, well, that's, you see how old I am. There's no videotape, obviously, anymore. I know there's not really videotape, but, you know.
Right.
From the replay, it's not conclusive whose man he was, really. It seems that Byrne and Hoogland, and there's a bit of a cluster of them there, but one of those has left him. And, say, at the far post, the guy's got away from Michael Turner, I think. So, overall, it's not good enough, you know, and we have this every week about conceding from corners, and it doesn't really matter who we play. I mean, if we played Mike's lineup that he had on Twitter earlier, we still would concede from corners, no doubt. Obviously, Mike, I think you made a mistake with that one, because you should have had Cameron Burgess instead of Matt Smith in there, as I commented. Although if you saw Matt's lineup, it was 9 defenders and one forward and one goalkeeper. We'd still concede from corners, because it doesn't matter who the personnel has been. You know, we've tried every possible permutation, I think, now, literally, of the defenders we have at the club, and it's just, I don't know what's happening, but the organisation and discipline isn't good enough, and that was an example of it yet again. And so, you know, we actually had a chance at 2-1. Wigan had to go for it, really. All we had to do was let them get desperate and start to open up. It would have been the perfect time for Mr. Ruiz to come on, see a bit of space, start stroking the ball into space when he's not too flustered, you know, not being closed down too much. So all we had to do was keep it tight at 2-1 and we could have gone on to win the game handsomely. We could have done, you know, like we did against, I think it was, who was it against? Bolton, I think, wasn't it? The last 20 minutes they just crumbled. We could have done one of them, but all we needed to do was be tight, and we just couldn't manage that. So we then put ourselves under pressure because, you know, we then were, you know, back to square one, so to speak.
Yeah. Now, listen, I hear you, David, and the match is level at this point. You know, again, a couple minutes later, Fulham actually had a decent opportunity to score with, on a free kick from Ross McCormick, Holly Woodrow's header from the center box just goes high, and that was unfortunate. And then comes the moment, like you were saying, David, then he brings on Brian Ruiz, and Tim, I want to go to you because I want to get your thoughts about this substitution. He brings on Ruiz, comes on for Sean Kavanagh. Talk about this move, your thoughts on it, and the change of position for Ross McCormick, who now went wide, and Ruiz then played behind Woodrow.
Yeah, well, as you were mentioning before, Kavanagh, not the greatest games, although no one really kind of stuck their necks out and really showed, you know, that they were better or had the greatest game of their lives. But, yeah, McCormick playing wide, I guess he was kind of playing in the midfield anyway, as I said before, you know, he was just dropping so deep to pick up the ball, especially in the first half and some of the second half. And he's been kind of positioned out wide a bit anyway. I don't entirely know why. I guess it's just because he, you know, he shoots from distance so often that I guess it's just kind of easier for him to kind of, like, make that kind of square run from the wing and just get the ball and shoot, but not how I'd use him. But regardless, you know, Ruiz kind of going to that role that he's just so good at, being able to pull the strings on an offensive standpoint, you know, and just spray the ball around wherever he can. But, you know, would have been nice to see Ruiz starting in that game and, you know, not hoogling that right wing or whatnot. So.
No, listen, very, very good point. Again, goes back to what Mike was talking about, Ruiz, and I'm still disappointed that Kaká didn't play at all. And that's, you know, and again, that's something that we can definitely talk about as well, because I would have started with Kaká and Ruiz. I know David doesn't like Ruiz, but he does see his value at times. I think this might have been a match where Brian Ruiz could have shined. All right, guys, and I'm just going to wrap this up in the 87th minute. Fulham actually had another opportunity by Colley Woodrow, but it's saved by the goalkeeper, and in stoppage time, Woodrow's shot is blocked by Bong, and the one funny part about listening to the replay and listening to the match, Tim, I'll just go back to you, was listening to Gentleman Jim try to say the name Bong over and over again.
Yeah, he kind of had some fun with that one, a little too much toward the end.
I just had to mention that because it actually was pretty funny. If there's one funny part of listening to the match, it was listening to Gentleman Jim try to talk about Bong in different situations. That was pretty funny.
All right.
I'm going to go right back to you, Tim, because we're going to go into stat attack. I'm just going to read off some of the main stats. If you have something else you want to throw in, please feel free to, and then I'll get the thoughts of my other two co-hosts. But let's just go over the main stats here. At full time, Fulham had 38% of the possession. Wigan had 62%. Total shots, Fulham had 14-9 for Wigan. Both had 3 on target. Shooting accuracy, Fulham were at 21%, and Wigan were at 33%. Passing accuracy, an interesting stat, Fulham were at 73%. Wigan were 84%. Key passes, Fulham had 12 key passes to 7 for Wigan. Crosses, this one surprised me a little bit. Fulham actually had more at 19-17. Crossing accuracy, Fulham were at 32% to 35% for Wigan. Corners, Wigan had more. They had 5-3 to Fulham. And Fulham had more fouls. They had 13-6. So, Tim, I'm going to go right back to you. What do you get out of those stats? And if there's something else you want to add, please feel free to.
Yeah, stats are kind of, if you look at some of the shooting stats, mostly like closer to the team's season averages, like 30% of our shots against Wigan were in the danger zone. Again, I know it's a fancy sabermetric inside Moneyball stat, but it's actually a really fascinating statistic. And that's about near our league average, is that we're 30% of our shots are kind of coming from the sweet spot, so to say. Wigan, 4 of their 9 shots were in the danger zone, which is a little bit more than what we're conceding, and we're conceding the league most, you know, percentage and the amount of shots it just goes to show that our defense is really, really poor. And, you know, although we outshot them, I think it was, you know, 14-9 overall, like when you kind of break it down, the numbers are kind of where you would expect them to be, and both teams are not particularly good. So, and something, one stat I wanted to bring up, and we mentioned before about the free kick goal from Jermaine Pennant, and I can't really prove this necessarily that we've conceded the most, but we've conceded 5 goals from a set piece or a free kick all season. And from one, like, kind of quick pogo-sticking stats around the league, it seems to be the most in the championship, which is a little worrisome. So,
yes,
more great news.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That, you know, again, Kip mentions that in his manager reaction, Tim, that that's something that they need to work on. The answer to that would be, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Because defending set pieces has been horrible, horrible. And, you know, that's something that you need to do better on. I couldn't agree with Kip more, but we all know this, Kit. Get a fix, please. You know, that would be my answer. Okay, fix the problem. David, over to you. What jumped out to you from the stats?
Well, I like Tim's stat there, which said that it shows both sides aren't very good. That's kind of like, that says it all, really, doesn't it, I think? But, it once again, you see, it was the old chestnut about possession. The possession that doesn't necessarily have a relation to the kind of shots and or the goals scored. And although we were well behind the eight board or whatever, as you guys say over there, on possession, we were still up on shots. So it doesn't, you know, for me, it's sometimes a bit of a red herring, but I think the possession in this case would be a moral victory. And this is what's upset them. Let's say the possession had been the other way round, and it'd been basically the whole match we'd been full and we'd been bombing forward, creating chance after chance, and then we lose the game. I think actually it would have been more acceptable in some ways, because at least we'd have been going for it. The possession here is actually the key one, because it just showed how languid we were. You know, we were retreating into our shells like, you know, a hibernating tortoise or something. I'm trying to think of some interesting similes to give, you know, like, because Yanis isn't here, he's normally pretty good at these. It was, we're like a hibernating tortoise or something. You know, and so for me, it's a possession, actually, because although it doesn't have any bearing on the actual result or the shots, it just shows you how languid we were at home in a game that was so important to us, yeah?
You know what? That's a great stat. And this is one that actually where the possession shows the approach, David. The approach of Kit in this match to allow them to have all that possession. And he, you know, again, he says it in his manager reaction. He was pretty much expecting it to be like that. So, you know, I think that's the disappointing part, is that when you see the possession and you see that it's not on the road, it's at home, I think that's the part that really rubbed me the wrong way. Mike, what stands out to you from the overall stats in this match?
Yeah, it was for possession. You know, you just shouldn't be giving teams 60% possession, especially a team who are second from bottom. And, it goes back to everything that we've covered in the show. Yeah, it was nice to see us get some shots in. And I read Tim's article the other day about shots against us, and it just shows that as a unit we're just not defending, and we're allowing teams to get in our box far too much, and not closing down. We've improved a little bit on the closing down, well, you should do when you've got 4 fullbacks on the pitch, but
almost 5,
but it's the possession for me, you know, that really is the thing. I mean, it's just not acceptable. You said earlier about Kit, and you haven't quite changed your mind. And, you know, from day one, I've wanted him. I've written articles about it. I've backed him up. I've tried to show he's learning and all this. But I think you learn more when put in adversity. And I'm afraid what I'm seeing from Kit reminds me of a manager he had. You wouldn't know it was Paul Braithwell. David would remember him. And he was a manager for about three quarters of the season, and his mantra was keep a clean sheet. So it was all about defend first, and it was the dullest football you've watched. And this is Kit at the lowest point, and this is his answer to how to get a result. And I'm afraid, for me, I don't want him as manager now next year. That's it for me. He's had his audition, and he's failed it.
Okay. And, wow, so he's lost you completely, Mike. I'm not quite there yet, but you know, again, like you said, you were a supporter of Kitts, and I have been since day one. You know, he's a glass half full guy, so am I. I want him to succeed. He's just making it very difficult for me to keep supporting what he's trying to do. And I'm glad that you really, Mike, analyzed his approach in this match and talking about being more defensive, and that's what this was. This is his way of showing this is how to get a result. And yeah, you get a result, but it certainly wasn't the result I was hoping for, that I think we're all hoping for. We wanted all 3 points, not a draw. I know it hurts, Wigan, but I'm sorry. When you're at home, you expect something different, not what I watched, you know, on the replay and what you guys saw at Craven Cottage. Okay, let's rate the players. And David, I'll start with you. What we're going to do, just for time's sake, because we are running short of time, I'm going to have you all rate Marcus, then rate back four, then we're going to do the midfield, and then we'll do the two strikers. So basically, we're going to do a 4-4-2 plus the goalkeeper to go through it fairly quickly. But we'll start just singling out Marcus Bettinelli. So rate the goalkeeper for me, David.
Very quickly, I'm going to say to you, difference with Bracewell and Simons was that Bracewell actually did manage to achieve clean sheets. And I don't know if you have the washing powder brand Persil in America, do you, Russ? But that was Paul Bracewell's name, nickname, Persil, because of clean sheets.
Okay.
Anyway, that's that one. Bettinelli, he had absolutely nothing to do, not really. Very, very little to do in the whole game. So you'd give him a 6. I guess we have this issue with the free kick. So I'm going to continue my meme-esque run. I'm going to knock off 0.1. So I'm giving 5.9 just because of the slight question about the free kick positioning.
That's great. It's a meme rating. Love the meme ratings. Okay. Over to you, Tim. What would be your rating for Marcus Bettinelli?
I would give him, and not to, like, you know, reveal everything, I kind of just give everyone a 6, 6.5, maybe a 7. You know, it's kind of in that range there where it's like, no, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't particularly good. So I'd say 6.5. You know, I mean, granted, as you said, he really had 2 saves to make all game, conceded yet again from a free kick. And you know, I'm not a professional soccer player or football player, but I feel like some of that is on the goalie and his positioning and whatnot. But, you know.
Okay. Fair enough. Over to you, Mike.
Yeah, I'll give Bettinelli a 6. I did think he could have done a bit better with the free kick. It wasn't right in the corner. It was, probably about a yard inside the line. So a goalkeeper shouldn't be allowing a ball in that position. But, you know, overall, as David said, he didn't have really much to do. And I'm not going to blame him for the second goal either. Because that's Turner's fault. So, 6 overall.
6 overall, okay. Mike, right back to you. I want you to rate the back four for me.
I'm going to be quite boring and give them all a 6, really. Just quickly,
okay.
Husband was his least effective game, but that's because we allowed them to have the ball a lot. Grimmer did okay. His crossing on a couple of occasions could have been better, but he did put in a couple, one good one in the first half and in the second half. And Byrne and Turner, you know, Turner, he lost his man. But overall, both of them just, you know, they did their defence, I suppose you could, you know, they did their job. They held their positions. Just an average 6 for everyone.
Okay, fair enough. David, over to you. Do you agree with Mike and just give everyone 6s, or is there anything else you'd like to add or change?
Well, I Sorry, Mike. I gave Grimmer 5.5 for his Zverevic impression in the second half.
No surprise.
Also, some of his passing wasn't very good at times. I mean, he did okay, but, you know, 5.5. I gave the same for Turner because I think that he's lost his man there on that second one. He should have done better than that, really. He did okay otherwise. Byrne, I will give a 6-2. I don't think he was outstanding, but I think he was, you know, he was fairly solid and okay. And certainly much better than he's been before he's left out of the team. And the husband also a 6 because I thought he did a reasonable job there. One little nice foray into the box, but apart from that, very little else.
Okay. Very good. Very good there, David. Tim, over to you. You pretty much said you could see everyone getting in the sixes. So why don't we do this with you? Why don't you just share your thoughts overall on the defense?
Overall was, you know, to be expected. Wigan, a terrible, terrible defensive team, offensive team. And yet, you know, the two things that teams can do, I guess it's the one thing, not to quote Alexei Lalas all the time, but set pieces, set pieces, set pieces. And the two goals they had were from set pieces and, you know, just really disappointing. And I mean, I guess you could kind of throw Hoogland in there, although he played in the midfield, you know, he was definitely tracking back a bit. But yeah, that kind of confused me a bit. But yeah, you know, and I don't mean to just as a cop out, just no one really did enough to make me think that kind of raised an eyebrow, you know, both good or bad. It was just kind of a ho hum end of the season affair.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all. You know, I see where you're going on this, Tim. Not a problem at all. David, over to you. Let's talk about the midfield. Rate the four midfielders for Fulham, please.
Hoogland, I thought, had a poor first half, really. He just sat back and invited the pressure on. Second half, I thought he was a lot better. They seemed to, you know, someone gave him a broom handle up his backside and pushed him forward a bit. And he did offer us a bit of width and stuff when he was getting into the box, but he got a bit tired near the end. So, you know, I'm a big fan of his, but I'm only going to give him 5.5 because he didn't really contribute that much. Scott Parker tried his best. He got stuck in like he did, but it wasn't really his game. I think that's virtue of the players he had around him. He didn't have people offering him pace and running on in front of him, so he didn't have the options that he has. Also, he was culpable for that free kick, so I'm only going to give him a 6 out of 10. Tunnicliffe, he started with some poor passing, but I thought he had a few good moments. He actually brought the first half to life with a couple of really gritty challenges in the space of a few seconds. And he played the ball that went through, of course, for Matt Smith's goal that was dummied by McCormack. And, you know, he definitely got his heart in it. It's just that he does lack probably the quality a bit, really. So, but I'm going to give him 6.5. Kavanagh now, apart from, as Knight said, apart from a fairly simple pass to McCormack for the goal, he was, and I said to you last night on the phone, he reminded me of one of those little dogs that you get in the park trying to chase a ball around, or a child chasing a ball around when playing with older kids. He was always just chasing the ball around. And tackle-wise, you know, you needed a few meaty challenges in there. You wanted, you know, to win the ball, and you also wanted to convince the crowd, you know, to get a bit of heart into it. But there wasn't. It just... He's very lightweight, and he should have gone a long time before he did. You know, it was a perfect chance to bring Kaká on, show some attacking intent. For me, I was very, very disappointed with Kavanagh. You know, he had a couple of chances to shoot as well, and one he just completely scuffed. And, you know, I don't want to put it up on him, but for me, it was a 4 out of 10, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. Okay. Very interesting take there, David. All right, Tim, back over to you. Again, just talk about the midfield four here.
Yeah, I think just kind of sixes yet again, not to cop out, but I think we're starting to see, you know, we're up to, 42 games now, 43 games now in the season, that we're starting to see Scott Parker kind of, you know, he's just such a linchpin for the team, and when he plays well, the team plays well. When he plays mediocre, the team plays mediocre. He plays bad, the team plays bad. And, you know, I think the Derby game, he was just so good in that game, and we had such a great game. And in this game, he was just pretty, you know, just kind of a passenger. And he's been that way the last few weeks, and I think we're really starting to see him kind of, I don't know, the miles on the engine starting to show. But that he, you know, he gets a six. Hoogland, not a great game either. I think Ruiz, you know, brought in an extra dimension. He's kind of, Ruiz seems to be the type of player that can play the one-touch passing that Kitt attempts to play. You know, it's kind of, we're kind of the opposite of what we were under Yol, where it was just the back four passing it back and forth because everyone was standing around and no one really knew what to do. You can kind of see what the offense or the movement is attempting. There's just not the skill level or the talent there to really put off. But Ruiz seems to be the one person that can do those kind of touch and go, one touch pass moves, you know, things that I guess is trying to get across. But we're going on that. Kavanaugh, not a great performance either. And then Stafalidis, I guess for the 9 seconds he played, I guess he gets a six or seven as well. And then Ryan Tannenkopf as well, okay in the defensive role, but you know, for all the hand-wringing he received when he was signed and then kind of exiled last year, I don't really see what he offers the team. And now, I don't know who else we'd put instead, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he should be benched, but I don't know, he's still very far from the finished product, but I'm not even seeing like any kind of ceiling there or any potential there, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. It does, and I see where you're going on that. You know, I expected a different type of player, you know, especially when he went to Blackburn. You know, heard about how great he played at Blackburn. I don't think we really have seen it since he came back to Fulham. He's had his moments, but I think that they've been a little bit too far and few between. Mike, over to you. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Tim. Back over to you.
He's been playing fine. I don't mean in any pejorative sense. There's nothing that, you know, I think we were all expecting.
Right. And that was my point. I think I expected a different type of player. Mike, over to you.
He's dropped off.
Oh, he's dropped off.
To tell you that to go.
Okay.
Back.
Then no Mike to finish off the show. Not a problem. I didn't see that. Was not looking at the screen, so that's my fault. All right, David, back over to you. Let's do the strikers.
Yeah, well, obviously, when you look at it in one dimension, both of them have scored, so they've done exactly what they're paid to do. And they've both scored a nice goal. So, on that respect, they should, you know, get good marks. But, obviously, the opportunities were limited because of the way we played. We sat too deep. They didn't get the ball enough. I think Matt Smith, I want to give him more, but I can't give him more than the 6.5 either because, you know, he didn't contribute to more, you know, to like even 2/3 of the game, I think. You know, he was off before then. I would have liked to see him stay on despite him being tired because I still think a tired Matt Smith might hit the target better than a fresh Corley, to be honest with you. But, you know, that decision was made and I can understand why it was made. But, you know, it goes back to what Mike was saying about the plan A and the plan B. But, yeah, so for me, I'm going to give him 6.5 on that. And I think Ross McCormack, again, he was busy, great goal, but frustrating as well at times. So I'm going to give him a 6.5 as well.
Okay, let's add Colley into the mix because he did play about 25 minutes. So let's add him in there as well.
I'm going to give him nothing hardly because it won't be a good one. 5 out of 10, I think. 5 out of 10 for Corley because, you know, he had a few good opportunities and he didn't take them once again, you know. And it's the same, you know, I don't know if you're going to rate any other subs. I mean, you can't rate Stafalidis. He's on the pitch for
No, I wasn't really going to rate Ruiz again. I don't think there's enough time. But I was going to rate Colley. I thought he was just on the cusp that we could actually rate him.
Yeah. I mean, Ruiz, you can't rate Ruiz, really. But I have to say, he offered us absolutely nothing, Ruiz, when he came on. I actually had hopes I had hopes yesterday, you know that he would actually create something and make a difference. But he didn't, Ruiz. And he started up front, and then he went further back to try and get hold of the ball because he wasn't getting the ball up there. And then
David, you never disappoint when it comes to Brian Ruiz. That's all I'm going to say. You never disappoint.
You always have something to say.
What
did he do for us, Russ? What positive things did he do yesterday?
Okay. in yesterday's match, I agree with you, but I just find it funny that every show you will always have something to say about Brian Ruiz. I just think it's funny. All right. I want to go over to you now, Tim. Well, what are your thoughts about the strikers in this match? And I also want you to consider what Colly Woodrow did or did not do in this match as well as a sub.
I would give Smith and McCormick both says again they did what they were supposed to and that they scored goals, but the shots that they took, especially Ross, just the same old kind of thing for me. I would like to see him get a little closer to the net. Only two, he had five shots. Only two were inside the actual box. You know, the three were pretty much outside. And Matt Smith had two shots. One was a beautiful goal and one was something way off target. And Colly, you know, it's hard to say about him. He was in there for a bit. He did attempt three shots on target. Obviously, that header could have won it at the end. But I guess I would have liked to have seen him and the team as well kind of utilize his pace more. You know, Matt Smith is obviously a type of big guy that will theoretically tire out the defenses and then just let Colly just run past them. But, you know, they never really utilized that. And or maybe Colly just never really utilized that himself. So, again, just six and a half for all of them.
Okay, great. All right, guys, it's now time to rate Kit. David, I'll give you the honors to start this off. Rate Kit from 0 to 10.
I am so tempted to award the old fat, big fat zero again. But just for variety, I'm going to half what I gave him last match, which was 3.33 recurring. So I'm going to give him 1.666 recurring, yeah, which is probably too generous for me, actually, I think, because he just set us up wrongly. Much too negative. We've said it all already. Substitutions were a bit baffling, and even if he had justified reasons for it, he just ended up getting the crowd on his back even more. Not the performance you want against the second worst team in the league and when you're trying to sell season tickets. So yeah, 1.66 recurring.
Okay. Tim, over to you. What are your thoughts about the full manager? So give him a rating, please.
I would say a 4. You know, I think he is right in the way, you know, I think it was smart to be conservative in the first 30, 40 minutes of the game, but, you know, we really could have, as he said before, you know, end the story, end the narrative, but they didn't, you know, it just kind of remained that kind of conservative, cautious self, so, yeah.
Okay, good stuff. All right. David, back to you. Let's rate Wigan.
Well, they weren't that good, were they, really? I think we allowed them to play far too much. You know, they gave us a goal after 3 minutes or so with an awful defensive header straight to Kavanagh. So, the table doesn't lie, remember, Russ?
Right.
Yes, they came and they did a job on us, but it didn't help them either. A draw doesn't help them in the slightest. So, I'm going to give them 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. Okay. Tim, how about you on Wigan?
Same. I'd give them a 5 out of 10. They didn't really do too much to really make me think that, wow, this is a team that really wants to get out of the relegation zone. Although they have a halfway decent lineup on paper. But, yeah, I think they did enough. I mean, that said, they are one of the worst offensive teams in the league, and they still scored 2 goals on the road, albeit against our awful, awful defense. So I think that, you know, you have to credit them for at least that. But yeah, other than that, nothing too much from them to really made you kind of quiver a bit.
Okay, good stuff on Wigan. All right, David, real quickly on the ref.
I thought he did okay. He didn't outstand me, but there wasn't anything too horrific either from him. So I'm gonna give him 6 out of 10. There were a couple of times I thought his fitness wasn't good enough, but I don't think he made any howlers. 6 out of 10, yeah.
Okay. Tim, how about you about the ref? What did you think about the ref in this match?
You know, I really have no opinion about the ref, and I think that might be a good thing. I don't think he had too much to do, and you know, it's kind of like you want your ref to be like your center back or your, you know, reliever in baseball. You don't want to like have to think about him,
right?
But, you know, or your offensive line in football. You know, I guess we could just if we're giving sixes for everyone, we could just give him a 6-2 so he doesn't feel left out.
Okay. Okay, I like it. I actually like that. Okay. All right. Let's do one final thing. Let's give a full man of the match. Full man of the match. And I actually put this out to the Fulham supporters on the College Talk Facebook page. I put it out kind of late, so I only have a few. Just going to read them. Simon Rugg said Grimmer. Mark Becking said Smith. Tommy DeRahman said no one. And John Mason said McCormack by a mile. Okay, and that's all we had. So, Tim, I'm going to start with you. Who would be your full man of the match?
Oh, that's a really tough question. Only because no one really did enough, in my opinion, to really think, oh, wow, like, you know, that when they came on or off the bench or when, you know, they played a lot, they really, you know, shone through and through. But, yeah, I guess I would say I kind of want to give credit to Michael Turner and James Husband for kind of coming in a really bad situation and not making things worse. So that's always a good thing. And also, I think Dan Byrne, you know, showing some character, kind of, you know, was kind of not exiled, but just kind of like left on the bench and kind of forgotten about, and has kind of come in and, you know, got some good aerial headers a bit and kind of saved some through balls to Fortuna that would have been, you know, very bad news had they gone through. And so.
Okay, good stuff.
Sorry, David, my total cop-out answer.
That's okay. That's
this
okay,
is not,
David.
This is not the game to have a triumphant comeback to.
Okay.
I have to agree with Tim, really. There was no obvious man of the match. There was no standout guy for me. No one did enough to worthy man of the match, I'm afraid. So, yeah, I'm going to cop out as well. I don't think there was a man of the match.
Okay. Not a problem. All right, quickly, guys, we have a couple minutes. David, I'll be doing the preview show with you. So you and I will be talking about Rotherham. But, Tim, before we go, share with me your thoughts about this upcoming match.
You know, it's really an opportunity yet again for us to really, end this relegation threat. Millwall and Wigan play on Tuesday, and we're kind of gunning for a draw, and then to play Rotherham, even a draw in that game, although not great, is still better than nothing. But Rotherham, pretty mid-table. They've lost, I think, like 6 or 7 in a row, or like 8 of their last 10. So they are definitely on their way down and very much there for the taking. But, you know, we've shown in the past that Fulham, you know, when there's an opportunity to take advantage of a bad team, we always forget that, oh, we're actually a bad team ourselves, so we're not really able to take it over. But I will say that the Rotherham shooting percentage is really bad, so if we can just hopefully keep our defense somewhat intact, we should be able to get out of there without too much damage.
I hope you're right, my friend. I certainly do. Listen, before we go, I just want to say thank you for coming back. It's been a while, my friend. Please don't be a stranger.
No problem. I will, yeah. Thanks for having me back, and I hope to kind of be able to call in a bit more and provide some more boring numbers to help our listeners fall asleep. So.
I like the numbers. I like the numbers. The numbers are good. Not a problem there, Tim. And, David, as always, I'll be in touch with you, and you and I will be doing the preview show in a couple of days.
Yeah, no, I just hope that's not famous last words from Tim about Rotherham not being able to shoot at all. I'm going to be listening back, of course, to my Sean Connery impression on my Android HTC One phone, Russ.
That's okay. I'll be listening back to the show on my iPhone 6. And that's a great way to end the show. For David, Tim, and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys.
Cheers. See you, Tim. Bye, Mike, as well.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania has bitten.